If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
And we are inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson. Landon Coons is our producer putting everything together. And tonight, it is a favorite of Beyond the Bricks. It's a favorite of Mike's because it involves, you know, when people call in or they say or write in and say we'd like to hear this or like to hear that, Mike loves doing, of course, any sort of request. And then also, Mike, you love doing anniversary shows, and you have saved the anniversary for me that absolutely is my favorite for a number of reasons. Mike, I could reach out right now and give you a hug because you are recapturing one of my favorite years.
Well, lovely. I like to, you know, bring joy to the people. So I'm happy that I will accept your hug gladly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm talking about 1991, which selfishly speaking for me was special because it was my senior year in high school. And who does not love looking back at the emancipation that comes at that time in one's life? But in addition to that, in the words of Bob Jenkins, of course, it was the Diamond Jubilee Edition, the 75th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and it involved several things about it worth looking back upon. There was history that was made. There was a fabulous duel, and of course, the result itself would go into the record books with a special note. But let's begin with what happened in preparing the field for the 1991 Indy 500. Rick Mears was the pole sitter, but that was not easy. He had suffered, of course, a big crash at the Speedway on Fast Friday, still came back the next day and won the pole. Later in the day, Greenfield's Mark Dismore was severely injured in a crash that Mike remembers vividly, since Dismore's engine, Mike, landed right where you were standing. Is this correct, Mike?
That's 1,000% correct. I was working for WTOL in Toledo at the time. We were standing on pit lane, and Mark Dismore hit the end of the pit wall, and where I had been standing, the engine landed. I ran. If you watch the video of the accident from turn four, you can actually see me try to jump over the – remember they had the little small debris fence type thing? They had a small fence that was in pit lane that separated the people. I mean, it wasn't very high. I tried to jump over the fence to avoid the trash that was flying off the car, and I actually tore my ACL on that fence trying to jump over it. So the ring gear actually flew over my head. I felt it go through between my hat and my hair. It hit a trash can, and it sounded like a bomb went off. I mean, it just totaled the trash can. I actually have video of it that I post every once in a while, so I'll repost it on Twitter for everybody to see. But it was one of the scariest things I've ever been a part of.
So we blame 70% the, of course, you don't make light of an accident, but that's 70% of it, and then 30% your lack of athleticism. Is that fair?
In my case, it's 100% my lack of athleticism.
Okay, fair enough. Well, listen, there were all kinds of great feats that took place in 1991, and when you think about that race, one of the real storylines happened on bump day. One of the great moments in the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. One of the great dudes, to put it that way, Willie T. Ribbs, who is just a true character, talented driver, perseverance personified, and on a very limited budget, he became the first African-American to qualify for the Indianapolis 500.
This is the second attempt, the first lap at 217.8, and the crowd goes crazy. They love that announcement. They're really pulling for this guy.
My word. Everybody in the front stretch here cheering Willie T. Ribbs on 217, faster than he has ever gone here at the Speedway. This is the time to turn on the Speedworks. If you have it, this is the time to do it.
fast start finish and off into turn one goes Willie T. Ribs. 2:17.997. Ribs is flying. Ribs is looking at a ninth row starting spot. Forget all the bubble business. If he can continue around at this rate, Willie Ribs will be cleanly in the show and within sight of the front row.
He's more than halfway home. Over 5 miles, two laps done. He's now finishing on lap three. He's using all the road. Look how high his exit is coming off turn four here, right up against the wall. Willie T. Ribs is looking good. Keep that engine running.
Here is a man who has learned his lessons. The white flag falls. He is 2.5 miles, some 40 seconds away from history. 2:17.5. A little bit of drop off that time. 0.4 mile an hour. Still very consistent and well within the window. And he's doing it just exactly right. There's nothing to criticize here.
He's almost there. Two more corners. Turn three and turn four. Now remember, his team give him the information of his lap speed as he comes off turn four and passes them. But Willie T. Ribs looks as if he's in the field.
Ribs down. Nothing can go wrong now. He can coast into Indy 500 history. The checkered flag falls. Ribs has made it.
Tell me how much pressure you were feeling.
Oh, Marty, actually, when I got in the car, I felt good. You know, I just felt that all the help that I've gotten from Buick and Goodyear and all the people that have been behind me and the fans, I just felt really comfortable, like it was like nothing had ever happened, like five engines weren't blown up and turbochargers hadn't exploded. I felt wonderful.
Did you ever think about the historical significance of this? I mean, you know the pressure was on from that side of it, too?
No, I've been doing this too long. And, it's just all in a day's work. The car felt good. Go do it.
Willie T. Ribs, by the way, great documentary about him by the title of Uppity, done a couple of years ago. Highly recommend watching it to tell the story of Willie T. Ribs. And when you walk away from it, if you were not familiar with him, you will be a Willie T. Ribs fan, I can promise. We mentioned the fact that Rick Mears was the pole sitter in 1991, but Gary Bettenhausen was actually the fastest qualifier. He started 13th. One of the most popular Delta Force introductions. Of course, the Paul Page would put together the Delta Force intros for ABC, made reference to all of these things, and it's one of the great intros in 500 history.
There were 3 million paving blocks in 1911. Today, only a yard of brick remains. The 2.5-mile path is surrounded by steel and concrete. Silent sentries to the history made here. It is a legacy of speed. Between these walls, the risks are great. Emotions come from both ends of the spectrum. The Indianapolis 500-mile race is quite simply a spectacle, a celebration of technology and humanity. Today, it celebrates the diamond anniversary running. It was no different when the track was first planned. The first 500 was the spectacle of its day. The giant track beckoned the best of the age, and 80,000 fans, many arriving by horse and buggy. Ray Haroon won the first challenge. Since then, the lineage has raced on. Men who share a special look, the brotherhood of the best. Down the years, they have sought a common goal, victory in the Indianapolis 500. In 1925, Pete DiPaolo averaged 100 miles an hour. Today, 220 is the standard. In the 30s, the cars led the technology. Cast iron and shaped sheet metal. Today, titanium and carbon fiber define the ultimate racing machine. Space-age electronics now help tame the raging horsepower. Danger has always been a passenger. Like the track and the speed, it is a constant, ever present. It, too, is a part of the lore. Without that risk, the men are just ordinary. In a flash, a skilled drive transforms to disaster. But man can and does survive the machine. This spring has proven no exception. The fates strike at random. Rick Mears, one of the best. Mark Dismore, one of the rookies. Or veteran Randy Lewis. Each spent his moment over the edge. But man triumphs, as did Rick a day later, in a new car to take the pole at over 224 miles an hour. Now the heroes of this age wait. They weigh the odds, consider the risks, and they pray the dream today will be theirs. As much changes over 75 races, much stays the same. Skilled hands still lovingly caress and coax the ultimate performance. 34 years ago, A.J. Foyt was an apprentice. Today, he is a master, starting in the center of the front row. In 61, Tony Bettenhausen died chasing a victory. Today, his son may fulfill his father's dream. 26 years ago, the rookie stripes came off for Mario. Today, there are four Andretti's. Now, the 500's first African-American and first Japanese will join the line. Jules Gu drank six bottles of champagne on his road to victory. Today, it's a frosty bottle of milk that awaits the eventual winner. That and so much more. The Yard of Bricks have witnessed the high-speed passage of history. In just a few hours, 500 miles from now, a 75th story will have been written. A new likeness will be added to a timeless silver cup. And a new name will sit atop the lineage of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500.
On race day, the race was delayed by nearly an hour due to rain, but when it got going, Mears would be the leader before an accident took out Kevin Kogan, Roberto Guerrero, and A.J. Foyt. Foyt waved to the crowd as if it were a goodbye. There was a lot of expectation that could be the end and that retirement could be next for A.J. Foyt, but he would return in 1992. The race came down to one of the most epic duels in IMS history between Mears and Michael Andretti. A late race caution flag bunched up the field with less than 15 laps to go. That set up back-to-back laps that are still remembered to this day.
The field comes off the fourth turn. The green flag waves. Here's the final 13 laps of the race. A drag race to turn number one. Rick Mears and Michael Andretti.
Well, Rick Mears made a great move down low. He leads the way.
Should be heavier. He took fuel on board, but Rick Mears is slower right now, about seven car lengths behind. Michael Andretti trying to get his first Indianapolis 500 win.
Michael Andretti through four running smooth. Rick Mears trying to reel him in. Coming down low, they head to the main straightaway, but it is still Michael Andretti and Rick Mears with a head toward turn one and Jerry Baker.
Former co-rookie of the year, Michael Andretti. Now Mears goes to the outside and Rick may have him. They move into the short shoot. Rick Mears takes the lead.
Bottom line is, people still to this day, I think when you talk about late race duels, talk about that duel that took place at the end in 1991, Mike.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I always had a theory that when Rick Mears passed Michael Andretti back on the next lap, that there was like a balloon. All the air came out of the balloon of Michael. Like it was, I have this thing won. I just passed Rick Mears, dramatic pass. I'm going to go on to victory. And then Rick says, you know, not so fast, son, and that's it. And it really, to me, was like this letting the air out of the balloon. It's like, this isn't going to happen for you.
And for as much as the air came out of the balloon of Michael Andretti in that moment, Mike, I know for you, an equal amount of excitement that took place when you got the chance to talk to Rick Mears about that race duel and 1991. One of Mike's, I know, all-time favorite interviews.
Yeah, Jake, one of my all-time favorite interviews. We were there on the in the media center, and we were there to interview Will Power, actually, before the race, and Rick just happened to be there. And they sort of had said kind of no questions to Rick, and then he's just started talking to people. And so I put a microphone in, and I asked him a question about 1991, and he just gave me an incredible answer. And you could tell everybody was kind of like, you know, Rick's not really supposed to be doing interviews while we're focusing on Will here, but Rick gave me some just incredible answers about 1991, and it's just one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. It was a short interview, about 10 minutes, but just some great sound from Rick Mears.
Well, sure, and then that's like, you know, you always heard Michael say afterward, I don't know where he came up with that speed at the end of the race. Well, that's playing your hand. That's poker. You know, I mean, I wasn't going to show my hand till after the last stop. I saw he had a little understeer in his car, which is the safe way. And so I thought, you know, if I show my hand before the last stop, because I wanted to get mine to where I knew exactly what I had before the last stop, so I wouldn't have to change anything at the last stop. Because if I have to change something at the last stop, I could go too far. I could tip it over. And now I'm in trouble. So if he's solid and he's leading and he's got everybody covered all day, he's not going to risk making a change in that last stop. So I'm not going to let him know I've got him covered until after the last stop. And that's basically what happened. He kept it solid. You know, he didn't make a change. If I'd have shown my hand earlier, he'd have taken a gamble and tried to put some more front wing in the car and tried to make the car a little quicker for the shootout at the end. But he thought he had me covered until after that stop. But then the passing back and forth, I knew he was going to pass me on the restart. I mean, that was a fact, because I got blocked a little bit by, Al Jr. and John Andretti, I think, in front of me. And I was drafting up behind whoever it was, the one that was in front of me. And when I got right to him and jumped out to go around him, he jumped out to go around the car ahead of him. Not through any fault. That's what he had to do. And the timing was that I had to lift to keep from hitting him. Now I jump over again. We got a three-car hole in the air, and that's just sucking Michael along big time. And he's always quick on restarts anyway. So I knew he was going by, and we aren't up to speed yet, so that means the groove is very wide in turn one. He could run anywhere. So I just went to the bottom and gave him the long way around. And then he entered too low to kind of block me, which helped me get the run back at him. If he had stayed up high and went through the best line he could take, I might not have gotten to him the very next lap. It may have been the lap after. But and then when we came back to it, round to one, he hesitated, didn't know which way I was going to go, and so he kind of froze and stayed in the middle, and that left the outside lane open. And I knew he had understeer, so I was hoping he was going to have to go to the apron. And when I dove up beside him and I watched him, stayed on him, and when I saw him dive to the apron, then I knew that was going to help me keep the front end of the car enough to stay in the throttle. And from that point on, once we cleared him, then I knew we had a good car. And then as a matter of stay focused, no mistakes, and go. And we were good until Mario caused the next yellow and the next restart.
It was said on ABC after that, Rick Mears was the master, and you could actually hear in those words the scientific nature under which he would approach moments like that. When it all came down to it, it was the fourth win for the Rocket, and according to Rick, one of the most special.
Absolutely, and that's part of what made the fourth one the best of the four, having that shootout at the end and coming out on top, and kind of, it was kind of a, yeah, help make up for the others, that didn't. So, no, it was the most gratifying race I've ever had here.
Always gratifying when we can take a look back at 1991. When we come back, speaking of epic duels, one of them that lives in Indy lore, but it only took place in the last stretch of the race. We'll get to it when we come back to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Working on building a dream space, but don't know where to start? At the Home Depot, we can help you bring your dream project to life. Whether you're building a backyard oasis, a podcast studio, or a wellness space, we've got everything you need, in-store and online. With project guides and free delivery options, it's easy to go from dreaming to doing. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
And we always thank Quality Supply and Tool for making it possible for us to gather here inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Beyond the Bricks, Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Coons. Taking a look back, anniversary years, it was, and hard to believe this, 20 years ago, that was the year 2006. Mike, is so often the case in the Indianapolis 500, we have races that are remembered for the way that they ended, and that overshadows dominant performances that might have happened throughout the course of the race. That is absolutely the case with 2006, because some may not recall just how dominant Dan Weldon was in that race.
I agree 100%. I mean, Dan Weldon was so good that day. He was trying to win the, he won the 500, obviously, the year before with Andretti Green, and then he had switched teams to target Chip Ganassi Racing. And he was trying to win, you know, back-to-back with two different teams, which would have been an incredible feat. And he was just so good that day. I mean, he led, I think it was 148 laps on the day, and he just had a late, you know, problem with a tire that took him out of the mix. But he still, I mean, still had an incredible finish, finished fourth. But Dan was really the car to beat, I think.
Yeah, so he was way out in front and dominating. And then, as you mentioned, it was a cut tire that brought him in for an unscheduled pit stop, dropped him out of cycle. And it looked at that point like things were going to come down to, would it be Michael Andretti that would get his first win? Marco Andretti, just a 19-year-old rookie, was there. And then, of course, whenever you're talking about a car for Roger Penske, you knew that Sam Hornish, who had knocked on the door for so many years, would be in the mix as well. It all led to a legendary finish, and this is how it sounded for the last four laps.
Down the front straight, the Vonage car in front, and he's going to take the lead into turn number one with Andretti green cars around him.
Michael Andretti.
And Marco Andretti. Marco goes low, about four car lengths behind his dad, Michael Andretti.
Three laps will remain for Michael Andretti. 7.5 miles to realize the dream. Here goes Marco Andretti, side by side.
Oh,
he's going to make the pass to the line.
Marco Andretti has crossed his dad, Michael. Marco leads the field into the southeast corner.
Hey, Dad, watch this. Marco Andretti to the inside, and now Michael going to lose the second position. Sam Hornish Jr. pulls up alongside. They're battling for the runner-up spot to turn three.
Pedaling for all it's worth, trying to hold on to second. Not going to be able to do it. Hornish jumped in front of him. Meanwhile, Marco roars away on the north end.
19-year-old Marco Andretti exiting turn four. The fans on their feet. He's got a 15-car length lead over Sam Hornish Jr.
The third generation of the Andretti family to race here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Two laps away from a win in turn number one.
Here comes Sam, though. He is closing up on Marco Andretti. About five or six car lengths back in the turn.
Mike King, Jerry Baker, Adam Alexander, Mark Janes, Chris Denary. You can hear Dave Wilson there as well on the call for the IMS Radio Network as Sam Hornish Jr. would win over Marco Andretti. Marco Andretti succinctly talking about the heartbreak.
I don't know. There goes, I guess, the Andretti luck, because second's nothing here.
He would later go on to say, actually it would have been right before that because I happened to be sitting right there when he got out of his car. I'll never forget, Mike, he took off his helmet. He took off the face sock, looked up, and almost rhetorically said, "Where did the speed come from. I think a lot of people were thinking that that was an incredible finish for Sam Hornish Jr.
Absolutely. One of the greatest finishes we've ever seen. Just, you know, it's amazing that you can call that last lap and basically you think, hey, Marco's got it in the bag. What a headline this is going to make, you know, and just Sam coming out with all that steam at the end. And Marco, just if he makes one quick feint to the left, he maybe wins the race. But an incredible heartbreak for Marco and an incredible victory for Sam Hornish.
All kinds of emotions, as you heard from Marco Andretti there, revolving around the Andretti family, the Andretti luck. Here's Donald Davidson, the Speedway historian emeritus, on the Andretti emotion.
I remember seeing Mario coming out, and a lot of people probably would take this the wrong way. He came out of the garage sometime after the 2006 race, and people were greeting him and congratulating him and everything, but you could tell that there was disappointment. And his grandson, his son, had almost joined him as a winner after coming, you know, retiring, coming back, and then almost winning it. And then being passed for the lead by his own 19-year-old son, Mario's grandson, and that it ended up that the two of them finished second and third. And you think, what a wonderful day for Mario. His grandson was second and his son was third. Isn't that great? But no, they came to win. And I think that's probably very hard for people to understand. And I can't. I can't put myself in that position because I would think, oh, wasn't it great just to be in it? Well, for some people, if you're so driven and the passion for winning is so great, it doesn't matter if you finish second by, you know, a lap or 1 inch. A loss is a loss, and that's very difficult for them to deal with.
The chief announcer in the booth that day, you heard me mention it, was Mike King, who shared his memories of 2006. Back, Mike, when you interviewed him.
I don't think there will be another final four laps of the 500 ever like that, Mike. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, there were four leaders over the final four laps, a father and son, a rookie, and an American driver leading the final 100 feet. And he was the first driver to lead lap 200 and not lead lap 199. The final four races, the final four laps of the 2006 race had so much that it's almost hard to believe. I mean, it really is hard to believe, you know, because it was, you had Michael, who it looked like may have a chance to win the race or go to the line battling his son, who was a rookie. So here you got Michael and Marco Andretti, but oh, yeah, throw Brian Herta into the mix because he's going to have to block a little bit to give his teammates an opportunity to get out front. And then Sam, who basically gets run into the dirt in front of Mark James down there in turn three, finds a way to gather it up and comes back to win the race. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing. And the fact that it unfolded 104 feet below me at the Yard of Bricks, Davey and I standing there, and you also hear Dave Wilson in there just let out this huge kind of laugh because it was amazing. I count my blessings every day that I was able to be a part of 15 500s as an anchor, but to be able to be the anchor of that one was just spectacular. And that those final four laps, I mean, that was 10 miles for the ages, man. I just don't know if we'll ever see another four laps quite like that. And I remember them fondly, that's for sure.
Mike, as we continue here on anniversary night, the next year we're going to feature after the break is one that clearly I think had as much buildup and anticipation as any in the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's correct. And also on that next anniversary, we get to hear the dulcet tones of Jake Query.
Oh, boy. Well, for those that were anxiously awaiting, now they're just going to have to be patient, right? And I don't mean patient and waiting for it. I mean patient of having to hear those dulcet tones. But we'll look back on all of it when we continue on Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
working on building a dream space, but don't know where to start? At the Home Depot, we can help you bring your dream project to life. Whether you're building a backyard oasis, a podcast studio, or a wellness space, we've got everything you need, in-store and online. With project guides and free delivery options, it's easy to go from dreaming to doing. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, it happens higher Hensley. Jake Query along with Landon Coons, Mike Thompson, as we're taking a look back anniversary years of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. We went back 35 years ago to the 75th running, the 1991 Indy 500. Then, of course, that fabulous finish 20 years ago in 2006. Now we go to 10 years ago. And, Mike, this is one, it's hard to believe that it's been 10 years since the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But when you talk about buildup and anticipation, considering that it is the first year that they technically said they could sell no more tickets. Now, obviously, the seat allotment was different than, say, in the mid-80s, so we'll never know the exact numbers. But the buildup and anticipation for the 100th running was unquestionably as much buzz as we've ever seen for this event.
Oh, I agree with that. I lived still in Indianapolis at the time in 2016, and I had people who didn't have really any interest in racing but knew I had a connection to racing coming up to me in 2016 saying, oh, the 2016, this is the 100th 500. I'm really excited about watching it. And you know, they were actually, you know, engaged in it, and they hadn't been ever before. So, you know, the pre-race buzz was something. And one thing I think we forget about 2016 that I think was one of the coolest things about 2016 was, do you remember, Jake, before the race, Lady Gaga was involved. She got to do the ride-along thing, the fastest seat in sports with Mario Andretti. Correct. It was supposed to be somebody else, and I forget who was supposed to do it, and then they said they had a back injury. They couldn't do it. So at the last second, they asked Lady Gaga to do it, and people were really skeptical about it. They're like, she's not going to care about this at all, but she, like, embraced it and thought it was great, and the pictures with her and Mario went viral, whatever you call it. I thought that was one of the coolest things that people don't talk about 2016.
And Landon points out it was Keith Urban.
Yeah, that's correct. Keith Urban was originally supposed to do it.
And then it was Lady Gaga that was the fill-in, if you will. That was the thing about that race, is sometimes when you anticipate one thing, it was somebody else that would come to the forefront, foreshadowing perhaps of what we're going to hear at the end. For the race itself, it was James Hinchcliffe, the Canadian, that won the pole. Ryan Hunter-Reay led the most laps, and as was the case kind of that era and still to this day of the Indy 500, Hunter-Reay might have had the best car and looked like it might have been his day to win the 100th running, but there was an incident on pit road where his teammate Townsend Bell took out both drivers on pit road, as both of them had absolute rocket of cars. And that wiped out both, and they were out of contention for the win. But a special moment happened in the race halfway through it. There was so much buildup as well and excitement about Brian Clausen, the dirt track hero, the legend of Indiana, and Brian Clausen, who still lives on literally and figuratively through his family's work through the Indiana Donor Network and Donate to Save Lives as an organ donor, because, of course, he would end up being fatally injured later in an accident. But it turns out that on the 100th lap of the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, Hoosier Brian Clausen found his way up front.
Continuing under caution, Donald Davidson.
Okay, thank you, Mark. The average speed, which had climbed as high as 218, now it's dropped to 166. Anyway, our short track fans will get a big kick out of knowing that Brian Clausen is leading the Indianapolis 500.
So let's go to Dave first.
Yeah, Donald just talked about Brian Clausen leading the Indy 500. That's the sound of the 88 machine leaving pit road as he finally makes that pit stop. But I tell you what, kudos to Brian Clausen. First year he was here, he only finished 47 laps before he had mechanical issues. And last year crashed out on lap 62. Heck, we're halfway. So small steps for Brian Clausen. He's enjoying his ride here this afternoon.
It's interesting because he came into the pits that you heard Dave call there on lap number 100. So he was not technically scored as the leader of that particular lap, though he began the lap with his number atop the pylon on lap 100, technically scored as the leader of lap 97, 98, and 99. There was another rookie driver in the field, and one that people started talking about perhaps through qualifying, but I don't know how many thought that Alexander Rossi of Andretti Herta Autosport would be a contender for the race itself. He was a former Formula One driver, a young driver who had been steady, not necessarily a spectacular month, Mike, but he was one that was consistent and got stronger as the month went along. But it just was interesting because I don't know how many people going into the race, even though he'd qualified well, had their eyes on Alexander Rossi.
Yeah, I don't know how many people even knew who Alexander Rossi is going into that race. I mean, we did, obviously, the people, you know, who are really hardcore fans, things like that. But I think that when Alexander Rossi started coming to the forefront, I know several people I was at the race with was like, who is this guy? I've never heard of him, you know? And so it was really interesting to see. Also, the fan support started about halfway through because he was having a pretty good day, and he, more and more people were talking about him. And I said, by the end of the race, you know, he was getting more and more fan support for sure.
In the end, he would be right there in the mix for the win. From Nevada City, California, Alexander Rossi would go on to shockingly win the 2016 Indy 500.
Joseph Newgarden makes that long haul down pit road, and he will be with Michael Young.
Yeah, they were talking about taking tires, waiting to see. So far, Tony Kanaan took four. Hinchcliffe also making pits. They have tires out for him. For Joseph Newgarden, no tires. It's fuel only. They gave him 4 seconds of fuel. He's not in a way. James Hinchcliffe, 3 seconds of fuel. He's not in a way. That could be the move. Not taking tires here at the late portion of this race.
Don't see that in open wheel racing much, do you, Dave?
Not too often, but very interesting. Here comes our leader, Munoz, down pit lane. But these Firestone tires are so good. And these guys, they think that, you know, if nobody changes them, now Tony Kanaan's got the new ones. We'll see what happens now because he's going to be coming out with these guys.
Five laps to go in the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Carlos Munoz makes that long, slow haul down pit road, and he comes into the view of Michael Young.
Munoz, just a quick splash and go. That was a 4 second stop as well. So for our three leaders, all they did was take fuel, all averaging about 4 seconds. It's going to be a drag race when they get back up to speed.
The leader, Alexander Rossi, down the back straightaway in front of Jake Query.
The first 100 years of running at the Indianapolis 500 is down to its last single digit miles. Alexander Rossi in front of you, Chris.
He's in the Napa machine, car 98, the leader in Indianapolis.
Elio Castroneves was P2, but Davey, we see that canary yellow car of Elio Castroneves coming to pit road. He does not have enough fuel to make it.
Yeah,
to
boy, I'm surprised. Rossi's been getting good mileage. You know, he pitted really late last time. Here's Bourdais with 100. He has a few more laps of fuel than Castroneves and Munoz.
Elio Castroneves comes to pit road. Michael Young, you have that stop as well.
Yep, Elio Castroneves, same thing. We're just getting fuel for these final leaders. Only three laps to go in the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. 4 second stop for Elio.
Oh, you threw your hands up, Davey.
It's crazy. I can't, you know, Rossi may have some. They may have conserved a new fuel. Looks like Bourdais coming right now. Oh, and who's that? J.R. Hildebrand get by him right now.
Alexander Rossi makes his way down the main straightaway. He's into turn number one. So, Davey, we're looking at 198 of 200 laps to go. Rossi continues to lead. He last pitted on 164. Can the rookie pull off the improbable?
He's been saving fuel. He's been going longer than anybody else, but we're soon to find out. He's off the pace for a reason right now, just trying to conserve fuel. Can he make this last lap?
Dave, you saw Sebastian Bourdais stop.
It was fuel only. Remember Ray Haroon, that first Indy 500. He didn't change any tires since last stint. It's a gamble. Guys out here aren't changing any tires. It could be the winning decision for the 100th Indy 500.
White flag is in the hands of Paul Blevins. He's waiting to see Alexander Rossi come out of turn number four. Tom Hansing is in the stand with him. But there
out.
He goes. And Danny, he may be out of
he's
fuel.
He's out of fuel.
Banky's very slow in turn one.
He is indeed. It doesn't sound like he's under power. Side wheels below the white line. Now with a short two, now in turn two, he may be done.
That car rolls through turn number two, and it is under power. He has backed it down big time. Here comes Carlos Munoz and Joseph Newgarden. They're running second and third. Jake Query, Rossi still the leader, but he's backed the pace down.
Alexander Rossi, the rookie out of California, is back
unbelievable. I mean, I know this kid. We talked about putting him in the car last year. Great family. What an accomplishment. They did it on fuel mileage. We haven't talked about him that much today, but I think, I'm pretty sure Donald will tell me he may get Rookie of the Year.
Of course, Alexander Rossi would cross the finish line, Mike, at a speed that would have rivaled those running the top of the Indy 500 45 years prior. But it was enough for him to get the win.
That you're on this clip, Jake. I mean, I know what that would mean to me. It would mean everything to me. But what does it mean to you that you're on these clips that are going to live forever?
You know, it's, and I appreciate you asking that, it's incredulous. It's a little bit uncomfortable. I don't like hearing my own voice. I never remember a call, so I don't remember. What I remember at the end of that race, and we've talked about this, I know, in past shows, is the frantic nature of trying to figure out where, because we had been through it in 2011 when J.R. Hildebrand hit the wall, and I don't know that we were paying enough attention in the turns to who else was in contention. And so there was a very concerted effort there with all of those pit stops taking place to, via the intercom in the turns, to know who was running second, third, and fourth, to know who we were looking for, because I really did not think that Rossi was going to, I thought for sure he was going to be passed right below me. So I remember that, but I don't remember the wording that I used. And so therefore, when I hear it, it kind of reminds me of what was going through my mind. But to answer the question more directly, Mike, you know, it's the biggest honor of one's career. There's no question about the fact that whatever I do in a broadcast standpoint in career, being a part of the Indianapolis 500-mile race and being a part of a radio network that I grew up listening to and that I'm now on 100% due to nothing more than dumb luck and circumstance, you know, that for that, it is a great honor. And it does seem weird. That's the best way I can answer it, is that it seems weird. And when I think about the fact that I don't know that I've necessarily ever had any, like, quote, memorable calls. But if people listen to the last few laps of something, to be a part of it, it's the biggest honor that one could ask for. No question about it. So it is very flattering. It's very fulfilling. But it is also, in my case, I'm well aware of the fact that I am simply a small blip on a great moment or moments that were facilitated and created by people who had much larger contribution than I. I mean, that goes without saying. One of those would be Alexander Rossi, who talked about his win in 2016.
Alexander Rossi, 6 months ago, I don't think you even knew you were going to be in a car like this. Today, you're the winner of the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. Yeah. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't even know where to begin. You're right. I mean, in February, I wasn't even thinking about IndyCar, and now we've just won the Indy 500, and it's thanks to an amazing group of people that gave me an opportunity to come here this year, relatively unknown in American, you know, junior formula, and they gave me the shot, and I have to thank Michael Andretti and Brian Herta for this opportunity and giving me such a wonderful race car all month.
Walk us through that final stint. Obviously, you were in the lead. You had to pit off sequence. I think your last lap was 170 miles an hour. You were gunning it for all it was worth.
Yeah, no, we ran out of turn four, and we were clutching and coasting it down the back straight, and we knew it was going to be tight, but Ryan helped give me a tow to the finish the last couple of laps there, and this is an amazing result for the team. I'll forever be a fan of Milk, and you know, a huge thank you to IndyCar and the American Dairy Association of Indiana.
And you will forever be known as an Indianapolis 500 champion. Congratulations, my friend.
Yes, thank you very much.
With Michael Young there, and the reality, Mike, I don't think Alexander Rossi in that moment had any grasp of what it was that was taking place around him.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, some of my favorite pictures of 2016 are the pictures where Alexander Rossi looks like he's just completely like, what just happened to me? Like, he doesn't know the magnitude of everything. And that's one of the things I really wish Alexander Rossi would become a two-time winner. And he's been so close multiple times to have that second chance to win a 500, because I think then a second time he would know what was all happening with the wreath and all those things. But there's all those great pictures of Alexander Rossi looking like, what is happening to me right now? You know, and just an incredibly great guy. Alexander Rossi is just a fabulous person. And one of the things I always enjoy about 2016 is when Rossi's name is brought up, people will say, oh, he won on fuel mileage and you know, he kind of backed into it. It's like, but people forget that he had the fastest lap of the day that year. He had the single fastest lap of any car in the race that year. So it was not dumb luck that Alexander Rossi won that race. I mean, he earned it.
1991, 2006, 2016, all a look back tonight. We appreciate you going on the way back with us here on Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.